Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Ma Prem Karima. Karima is a holistic counselor, founder of the Inner Alchemy School, and has over 30 years of experience working with people. Karima offers a holistic therapy approach that combines therapy with meditation. Karima is passionate about helping people live a more fulfilling life. Her understanding is that a better world starts with healthy, fulfilled individuals. Hello, Karima. Welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
I'm very good. I've been looking forward to this. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm happy to be here.
Perfect. Likewise, I don't know exactly what will happen, but let's go. Let's be open to it.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm so happy to have a chance to talk to you about your journey with Osho. You have many years of experience living the commune with Osho and also in other Osho communes outside of India. And also you have been working as a therapist with people from all over the world. So you have a wealth of experience to share and I can't wait to dive in. So let's start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about how you came to know about Osho.
Okay. It was 79 and I was living in Germany studying psychology. And I moved into a shared house with other people. And two of them turned out to be sannyasins already. And one of them eventually inspired me to do a group in Germany in a place called Povodaya, which is one of the first centers in Germany. So I went there, did that group, and I had no idea what to expect. It was bioenergetics and tantra. It was 1 week of the most intense experience I've ever had. I was breathing and releasing emotions, and it was unbelievable. So at the end of that week, I had for the first time a real experience of energy flowing, of that there was a massive inner world in me. And then I wanted to learn where these people who ran the group had learned, which I found out was Osho or Bhagwan at that time. And then it was very clear for my heart that I wanted to go, but I was still very based in my head at that time. And so I had half a year of discussion between my head and my heart. Head says, don't go. No, no way. No way. You don't go to India. You don't want to see a guru. You don't want to wear orange and a mala. And my heart said, we have to go. We have to go. And my heart won. And so I went in November 79. I flew to India.
Okay, I like it. The heart won eventually. That's beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you are in India. It's 1979. And from Germany, you know, you were studying psychology. So it's kind of your life turned upside down. So tell us a little bit about your first experience in the commune when you arrived and the first time you saw Osho in person.
So already on the way, when I flew there, something changed. I could feel something started relaxing and I knew I was flying in the right direction. And when I entered the ashram for the first time, I don't know if you know, the entrance was called the Gateless Gate. And so I entered and I knew I had found my tribe. The feeling was other people like me who were looking for something. They had gathered here. And so immediately I felt at home. And it was just amazing to arrive there. And my very first evening satsang with Bhagwan at that time was in the old Buddha hall. And I will never forget that moment. I was sitting at the back of the hall and he came in and there was something, there was a connection. I called it, he threw me a lifeline. Like I had such an immediate sense of trust with him. And He reminded me of my favorite grandfather, who had a heart of gold. And I'd never seen him, Osho, before, only that picture in that center in Germany. And there was this feeling of, I'm in the right place. So it was beautiful. And that trust just deepened and deepened and deepened over the years.
I see. For you, what was about Osho that really impressed you, that really blew your mind away?
It was his energy or energy field or what he had created around him, like sitting in meditation with him, which I did for so many years, for so many hours. It was a treat. Like he had the capacity to allow us to drop into very deep spaces. Like sitting with him evening after evening was an ongoing exploration. It wasn't always easy. There were times it was confronting and the mind was really busy. And then there were these moments more and more, especially in the beginning, where I experienced an opening or a melting or a peace or something that I had never consciously felt before. So for me, he had an amazing energy field. And what I love and I'm super grateful for, he created what he called a Buddha field. So the field around him had a very special vibration, it was a field of consciousness. And I personally often experienced that like a very crystalline field. Like it was so clean and so beautiful to be in it. And sometimes when I lived there later and people came from the West, you know, crunched up in the head, forehead, wrinkled, stressed, you know, worrying a lot, they would arrive and you would see after a few days how they started softening, opening, less wrinkles on the forehead, opening more. It was just amazing to watch what the Buddha field he created around him.
I think this idea of Buddha field, this concept, this experience is very important. And it's probably one of the main reasons why so many people were attracted initially to Osho and then they stayed there. They were kind of blown away. You know, their minds like yours initially, you can, you know, discuss, you can say, you know, I don't want to be with a guru. I don't want to be in India. I don't want to wear orange mala. All of this doesn't belong to me. But then once you enter that energy field, when you are in the presence of this incredible man, everything kind of melts away and the energy takes over. So, yeah, maybe talk a little bit more about that because it's something so special, so valuable.
Yeah, because I was so convinced and I had committed clearly. I said to everybody before I left, I will not take sannyas. I will not come back in orange. I will not wear the mala. You know, I just want to check this out for 2 months in my term break, get a few tools and then come back and keep my studying. It all dissolved. When I was there, I knew this is my place. And I was quite passionate and radical, I think, because I decided in my first 5 months there to live there forever. I actually, my 2 months became 5 months. And I did every single group that was offered. It's 13 groups in 5 months. And I just couldn't get enough. And then I was like, I want to live here. So I just went back to dissolve my life and come back to live in Pune forever. That's how strong the beauty of the energy field was. It completely pulled me in like a magnet. Many of my friends who were with me there at that time, the same thing, you know, Osho was like a magnet for truth seekers. And we were all very lucky, the ones who had found him, that he actually existed and had created this. Because in Germany at that time, there was nothing except some people who came and ran the groups, like the sannyasins who ran the group I did. But otherwise, there wasn't much there yet around mindfulness and consciousness. So we had to go to India to find it.
Jumping a little bit ahead, thinking of today and staying with this theme of the Buddha field, Osho left the body. Do you still feel that there is a chance for people to experience the Buddha field? Like for me, for example, I came to Osho in the late 90s And I went to Pune for the first time in 1999. And I also, first time I saw all these people dressed in white, shouting Osho, I felt like, you know, this is a sect. I don't want to be part of it. But then there was an energy that overtook everything that my mind was saying, and I took sannyas and I just completely melted away. And I had, obviously, even though there was no Osho physically present, I could feel this kind of energy that swept over me. Today we are in 2021. What about that?
For me, it's Osho has, how do I put that? He said when he passed away, when he left his body, he said, I will dissolve in my people, which I first didn't really know what he meant. But I just talked to a friend of mine this morning who's been on a parallel path. And what I feel is he has, what he shared with us, what he shared with me, what I learned there, and all my friends who are spread all over the world, and what we are sharing with the world. The Buddha field connects us. Like I sometimes, because I'm in Sydney now doing my own thing here, I sometimes imagine just everybody else that's meditating right now. So I visualize a Buddha hall in spirit of everybody on this planet meditating. And we together create, you know, that Buddha field, that field of consciousness. And it's definitely available, I think, for anybody who wants to connect deeper to themselves can connect to that, because it's a vibration. And that's what he did. He said to us, find yourself, you know, find your own truth. He never said, follow me. He was a true master because he didn't make us dependent or created fear. He said, follow your own understanding, and then you follow me. So he always pointed the finger back at us. And for me, the Buddha field is now spread all over the earth, and it's happening in so many countries. Like what you're doing is part of the Buddha field, and you know, so many people share their work, their understanding in their own way, and it's definitely happening. It's more a net over the world now.
Wonderful. That's very inspirational. So if you were to advise someone who wants to connect with this energy field of Osho, what's the best way for you to connect with Osho energy and create this Buddha field wherever you are?
For me, how I would summarize it now, what Osho did was he allowed me to really go in, to face myself, to face protection, to learn to open my heart, to learn to feel. And then the biggest treasure was he pointed towards what I now call true nature, like the core, our Buddha consciousness inside. And we all have that. So the moment anybody has the courage to turn in and face whatever challenges might be there, you know, old repressed emotions or parts we don't like so much, if we have the courage to face whatever is there, you keep going deeper, and then you find this incredible treasure, these beautiful qualities of peacefulness, of love, of compassion, of kindness, strength, freedom. Like there's so many qualities in there. And Osho was the one pointing us in the right direction. He often said, you know, it's like he's the finger pointing to the moon, and the moon is true nature in us. So he helped us to find that. And so I would say anybody who's ready to do the work, who's a seeker of truth, who has the courage to go in and not run when it gets difficult, can find that inner Osho or that truth or the beauty. It's in all of us.
Wonderful.
And I'm very passionate about that.
Yes, it's beautiful. Okay, so coming closer to your present day's profession, I understand that you are a holistic therapist and meditation teacher. You have lots of experience, and you are the founder of the Inner Alchemy School. So I'd love to hear your approach that combines holistic therapy with meditation.
Okay. I mean, that was what Osho did with us. Like he brought everybody in the early days that had been a therapist in the world in America or Germany, they would come to Pune and then share their skills. That's how he created the Multiversity, which was our university teaching skills from all over the world, from the mystery school, esoteric sciences, to counseling, to primal work, to martial arts. So people would come there and share their skills, and then we would learn it. And I learned first in counseling, like in the faculty where that was taught. And then I ended up in a mystery school, which was my home for many, many years when I lived there for 4.5 years. And that's where most of my training happened. And the inner alchemy is a term that comes from that time, because we learned to transform any state of suffering that we were experiencing into a state of well-being. And when I first experienced that in myself, or then witnessed it in others, it felt a little bit like magic, or like I didn't really know how it worked, or mystery. You know, how do you start? You come in, you have feel unworthy, for example, then you use these right steps of alchemy, and then you end up feeling really relaxed or worthy or find value or you feel happy. So I was, when I was first trained, I didn't quite know why it worked. I just knew it did work. And then over the many decades now, I'm a bit like a scientist, an inner scientist. So I was really studying, why does it work? And now I understand the components, how energies do transform. And that's what I'm passionate about teaching. And one of the main things what I'm most passionate about is we have to learn to open our hearts. Like when the heart doesn't open, you cannot bring acceptance to whatever is going on. The judgmental mind comes in and stops you. So learning to open the heart and making space for your inner experience, and then bringing kindness and acceptance to it, that's how energies start shifting, and they open up and they reveal more. And that is one of the big gifts that I learned through the mystery school, you know, really coming into the heart, understanding what it means to have an open heart, and to also the challenges, because all our hearts generally have thick layers of protection, because everybody has been hurt in some form or other, somewhere, somehow. And then we protect the heart from more hurt. So we have to face these layers of protection. But when that is done in the right way, the heart opens more and more. And then you get gifts beyond gifts. Like I call the heart the gift that doesn't stop giving. It's like my favorite image is like a treasure chest that you open. And there are so many treasures in the heart. And it definitely has the power to allow transformation.
Wonderful. Power of love.
I have a very simple example to explain that. Like today in one session, a client felt very hurt by her sister. And we worked towards, I wanted to help her to feel the hurt, to be able to transform it and go deeper inside. First, when she came across the hurt, she was saying, don't be so stupid, which is her inner judge, which is the mind going, you know, trying to cope with the pain or not feel it. And then I taught her then to do what I just talked about, to bring her heart in, to allow the pain and the hurt to consciously be a bit more friendly, to accept it. And then she said, this is amazing. When I feel my hurt and the acceptance wraps itself around the hurt and it starts melting. I said, yes, that's exactly how it works. That is inner alchemy. That is transformation. And it's very simple once you understand, but we make mistakes just because we don't know better. You know, we resist the pain with good reason, but then it doesn't shift. We have to consciously meet it, feel it, and accept it. And then it starts opening, and then you feel it, or it takes you deeper, but it's not a stagnant energy anymore.
Yes. And in your experience and understanding, what is the role of dynamic meditation in shifting the energy in opening the heart, as we are talking about this idea of opening the heart?
I mean, dynamic is more than that. Dynamic opens everything. Like, I love dynamic. I feel the changes that have happened through doing dynamic every morning, thousands of them. You know, we would wake up, even if you're tired and you, oh, I don't want to, I want to sleep, and you drag yourself to the Buddha hall and do dynamic, and you feel refreshed and washed afterwards. Dynamic for me is one of Osho's big gifts. It's totally scientific because first you just breathe, which opens up energy, bypasses the mind. Then you have your 10 minutes of crazy release, whatever. And I learned so much in just being in that stage, you know, how to feel anger, how to feel pain, how to feel whatever, also joy. And then you jump to align your energy, and then you can be still. And Osho was so passionate about that we Westerners, when we go to India and then we want to sit and be still, he said, it's impossible. You go mad. So he gave us all these great cathartic meditations to release the stress, to discharge. And then when you do that for half an hour, you have a real chance to experience stillness and dropping in. And so dynamic is brilliant. I just thought the other day, because we wanted to talk a bit about vision and stuff, I always imagine if the world would wake up and do dynamic, everybody, yeah, every morning, so much tension would disappear. Like when we did dynamic every morning, you just bring everything that you're bothered with or any tension or whatever into dynamic release, and then you had a really nice day. It's like washing yourself. It opens the heart, it opens the body, it opens the breath. And then you are more alive. So dynamic is brilliant.
Wonderful.
That is a way for anybody who wants to get through these first crusty layers that we all have, you know, of protection and disconnection. Dynamic is brilliant for that.
Yeah.
It works.
Yes. I'm also really very, very passionate about dynamic meditation. And I just wrote a book, which is about to hopefully be published in the next weeks and months. And the core theme of the book is essentially to promote dynamic meditation.
Brilliant.
And yes. Because I've seen that in the last, 10, 15 years, meditation has become mainstream. So now many, many people who would normally not be attracted to meditation are practicing meditation. However, as we all know, the meditations they're practicing are the old traditional techniques. You know, essentially, you know, it's a lot of mindfulness or transcendental meditation or variations of those two main typology of techniques. And there is not really anyone in the mainstream mentioning dynamic meditation, or there is not this idea of active meditation, of catharsis and everything that you just discussed. So I feel like very passionately the need, the urge for me to go out there and say, hey, you know, maybe, you know, because dynamic meditation is being practiced by thousands, perhaps millions, I don't know the exact numbers, but so many sannyasins around the world, but it's still not really recognized, it's not acknowledged in the mainstream. So I always wonder, what would it take? Let's talk about this. What would it take to make dynamic meditation more mainstream?
I mean, if you're writing a book about it, brilliant. That's a great step in the right direction. I use it in sessions when I teach clients to learn to feel and cathartic emotional release, which is like the second stage of dynamic. You know, I teach them in the privacy of sessions or in many therapy groups. It's a big part. All the real big transformational groups, Path of Love, Hoffman Process, they all use it. So I think what you're doing is one step in the right direction. And it's just befriending people a little more with the idea that this crazy looking thing, you know, when you see pictures of dynamic, they still look weird. I've done thousands. I know how amazing it is. But when recently there was a German documentary about the Osho Uta Institute, and they dug out old pictures of dynamic again, naked dynamic. It looks weird. We look like a weird cult, you know? but it's not doing justice to the inner experience, because it is so fantastic to be so free to really let go. For me, dynamic would be the answer to a lot of world problems. Imagine everybody doing this for a while, 21 days.
Yes, I'm totally with you. And I see dynamic meditation being practiced in the offices. You know, people go to the office in the morning and you have a room that is the cathartic room, or the practice where you can go do dynamic from, I don't know, 7 to 8 a.m. And then every time you feel like you have a build-up of tension or anger that you can't express normally during meetings, you can go there and just release and then sit quietly. You know, something like that, even politicians before taking such very big decisions. I mean, these people, with all the limitations, and we love, you know, condemning them and criticizing them, but these guys have a lot of pressure, you know, as human beings. They have some big decisions and a lot of pressures, so they need to be helped as well. And dynamic is, to me, is the most powerful, effective tool that they could use.
Osho was a visionary, like the things he created, like not just dynamic meditation, Kundalini, then the no mind meditations, the mystic rose, you know, he created so many meditations that are brilliant and they all work. But I think he was very ahead of his time. And so I totally agree. Dynamic should be offered everywhere. And what you described, I often imagine like every house or every office should have an anger room, you know, with mattresses, pillows, a punching bag or something. And people need to learn how to release their anger healthily and then transform it into strength and aliveness. So if that was accepted, I'm really pissed off right now. Someone in the office goes into the anger room, does 10 minutes, whatever, comes out with a smile. How amazing would that be?
Yes, yes. Well, look, we plant seeds, you know, that's what I love doing, you know, talking about these things, putting it out there, and then existence takes care. We play our part, and hopefully it will happen.
Yes, hopefully it will happen.
So what have you learned from Osho that helps you in your work and life today?
It's endless, so many things. Like, I think the biggest is the understanding of true nature. That's the biggest gift, that through everything you do when you go in, no matter how hard sometimes it is, you know, when old pain comes up, or when you face personality parts that you thought were not okay, you know, you shouldn't be. My thing was, I grew up in Germany, you know, being very strong. That was an ideal. So the opposite, weak, was not good. So I always tried not to be weak. So stressful. So it took me a lot to learn to be strong and weak. So that's just on the way in, you meet these parts. But what it was really about is to come in contact with what I said in the beginning, with true nature. And I know now, 100% sure, that we all have that in us. Everybody, if they dare to do the work, can get in touch with an incredibly beautiful, healthy place deep inside. And Osho has shown me that it's possible, that it's there, has given me tastes and glimpses in the beginning, tools to get there. And then eventually I was so equipped after 20 years in the commune that everything I learned I could take into the world and share it now, you know, because I was in an alternative world for 20 years. And then I was strong enough to share all the tools in the outer world again. And even if I just think about all the discourses I sat in for 20 years, every night, you know, listening to 1, 2, 3 hours of him talking, or when he left his body, it was on the screen. But the wisdom that he imparted, he talked about everything, all traditions, and I feel like I got soaked in all of that, and some things landed deeper, some fell off again, but it's just amazing. Like, I just said to a friend the other day, it's a bit of a renaissance at the moment. I'm listening to one of his discourses again that I listened to probably 30, 40 years ago, Tantra, the Supreme Understanding. And hearing it again now with the understanding I have today, And it makes even more sense. And I think in 10 years, it will make even more sense. And he shared so much. And he was also silly. You know, he had some discourses, the, I forgot the name, they were called some silly name also. He was just making us laugh a lot. He was an incredible master.
Indeed, indeed. And I love the point you just made about listening to Osho's discourses again or reading his books after years, and you get a deeper insight. So sometimes I listen to the same discourse and I hear different and I go deeper and understand. Like, it's incredible. It's a journey that is a never-ending journey.
Like someone I was running heart groups for quite a few years, we had a collection of Osho quotes about the heart. And we used them as inspiration. You know, we would play an Osho quote, then do a teaching or an exercise. And certain quotes, they sunk in deeper and deeper and deeper. For example, one of my favorites is when he said, the only problem with hopelessness, despair, misery, suffering is you get very big ears. What is it? What's the only problem with all the suffering we can experience? And then he goes, the only problem is that you want to get rid of it. I say, what? So he talks about resistance to what is as the only real problem, the real suffering. When we resist our pain, it gets worse. When you learn to accept it, it shifts. So things like that, that in the beginning were totally unknown to my intellectual mind, and they didn't make sense, I would go over it again and again and inquire and use it and then come more and more into my own understanding. So many of the things he said, they took me a long time to really get them. They made sense, but I didn't really get it in the beginning. And then more and more, I did get it. And then I thought at times, oh, no, I really get it. And like I said, then few years later, I go, and now I really get it.
So we talked about your school, and it seems like you're really doing very well. Of course, now with this COVID situation, I'm sure everyone is a little bit, at least in face-to-face meetings, things have been restricted. But what are your latest projects? What are you up to? And is there anything else you're working at the moment?
Yeah, I started writing a book about everything I learned about 3 years ago. And it came first from clients who said, because I often shared my stories, you know, and they were like, what? India? Osho? What is that? So I would tell, you know, interesting stories from my life. So they said, write a book. And first I didn't want to. And because I never saw myself as a writer, I love what I do. I love my sessions. So never planned to write. But it landed, and then I started writing, did a writing course, and then now the book is ready. The cover has just been designed, and it's going to be released in June. And it's going to be an overview of all the tools that I learned in the last 42 years, everything that I feel works, you know, in terms of inner transformation. And so that's been my big project, where most of my time in the last 3 years went into that. And I'm just right now having a break because they're doing the layout and stuff. So I don't have to work on it right now. And I have to get used to having some space again.
Indeed. Yeah, I can only imagine that because I've been through that just recently. You know, writing a book is a big project.
It is a massive project, yes.
Yes, and it's a wonderful experience. Whatever it lies for me is that it helped me to organize my thoughts in my mind and putting it out there and making it in a way that synthesizes a little bit everything I've learned up to now in my life. And it's been a great experience. It's a beautiful process, just the act of writing.
Yes, I feel that too now. I learned a lot while writing and got clearer on the tools or how to bring it into understandable language. You know, I do want to make metaphysics or alchemy or transformation more understandable to people who haven't been 20 years in a commune. And I hope I succeeded. We'll see.
Let's see. Okay, so what's the title of the book, and where can people find it when it's going to be published?
The title is Becoming Whole, The Art of Inner Transformation. And I don't know yet at the moment. It's just in the process of being published. And then once it is available, it will be available through the normal channels, from what I know, what my publisher said.
Okay, perfect. I will add the link to the show notes of this interview.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so I normally finish the interview with three questions. But before that, anything else you would like to add? Anything I didn't ask or we didn't discuss that you feel like you want to share?
Yeah, maybe one piece, because I often dream of this world changing and consciousness growing. And I feel in my time in India, I had a glimpse of what it can be like when you live more consciously from the heart, you know, more present. And I still have that vision for the bigger world. And that's my biggest hope, that that happens, and sooner than later. And the vision of what Osho called the new man that he had in the early days there already, I feel that it's still very true, you know, to live consciously from the heart in connection with yourself. And yeah, that's the last piece I want to add.
Oh, it's amazing. And I think the way you are living your life, the work you're doing is contributing to create that world, and you're doing your part. And then, of course, we hope that more and more people will join. But I see, I am actually used to be much more negative in looking at the state of the world and thinking that it's in a complete disaster. But then I also look around and I see that there are so many people, so many talented, intelligent people who have the same desire. They may use different tools, different language, that may have nothing to do with Osho, but they are striving for light, for living a more happy, conscious, and loving life in different ways. And of course, it's
not. If we just look at, you know, what you said in the beginning, mindfulness has become mainstream and meditation. That wasn't the case 40 years ago. Yoga is, which is another tradition, has become normal, you know. And heart, living from the heart, there's more awareness of the heart. And there is HeartMath Institute in America. They do amazing work. And it is changing. I want to add one little piece that just touched me a lot. On TV in Australia at the moment, there is a new ad promoting men to cry. And I couldn't believe it when I first watched it. And it's not coming from it doesn't say who created it. It's just you see a child crying, then a boy crying, then a teenager, and then men crying. And it's basically promoting men to cry. And I thought, that's a change in consciousness, because that's what everybody needs to learn, to be more real, you know? So I do see things happening and consciousness is growing. I just, I always hold that vision, that the world changes in a very, very good way. I will never give up.
Neither I will. So it's wonderful. Okay, so I've got three final questions. The first one is, what is Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
That he helped us all who found him to go in, to point us at ourselves, and that he said, I can put it in this simple way. He always said, when I look at you, I see Buddhas everywhere. You're all Buddhas already. You're just asleep. So he just wanted us to wake up. So he was always reminding us of our Buddha nature. And I think that's his biggest gift. And then all the tools to do that.
Beautiful. The second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you received from Osho?
So many. Just this. Many, many moments sitting in his presence, and that especially when there was an unexpected breakthrough, just in a silent meditation, and suddenly something opens and I have an understanding, or I drop into stillness, or I melt away and feel this deep peace. Moments like that, I would say, are the biggest gifts.
Okay. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
He connects me when I feel him or think of him to my core, to the depth inside myself. And that's where I meet him. I think he said everything, but one of the things is, in the stillness of your own heart, that's where you meet me.
That is so very beautiful. So thank you so much for being part of the Love Osho podcast. This is the end, and it's a wonderful way to end this interview on this idea of stillness in the heart and going back to the heart from where we started our chat. So, Karima,
chatting with you.
Send you lots of love and a big, big, big hug.
Thank you. Well received.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.